RCR with Paul Brennan, Reality Check Radio.
Time to talk travel again here at RCR. Our go-to travel expert, Tim Malone, is back with us. Hi, Tim.
Hey, Paul. How are you doing?
Not too bad. I was thinking of our last chat. You mentioned that you were planning to head to New York for the to be in Times Square in November, I think, for the presidential election on the day. And since we've been talking, quite a bit's happened in those campaigns, obviously. Mm. But I was looking last night on Flight Radar 24, just curious to see what the traffic was doing around our part of the world. And I noticed literally Air New Zealand and Qantas 787 Dreamliners racing each other to New York. So two options there. Which one are you going on?
We'll be going on Qantas, in actual fact. So their flight departs from Sydney. It goes Sydney, Auckland, New York. So for a Kiwi, that's an Auckland, New York nonstop flight.
Yeah. Huge range, eh? That's a long way.
Yeah. It's 16 or so hours. And on the southbound, sometimes Air New Zealand don't quite, they run into problems that Qantas don't seem to run into. And that's really the main reason why we're going Qantas. Air New Zealand, I guess, at least once a month or so now, they still have to call for volunteers at JFK to deboard and come back via Los Angeles or Houston or some other route, which is never a popular thing to have to happen. I don't think they've had to stop in Fiji for a couple of months now, but that's another thing they used to do. So it's great to have a choice, and I'll always take the one with the best fare, the one with that's most reliable. So that's what we're doing, Qantas, yeah.
Okay, and when the day comes, we'll have to talk to you while you're there. We'll do that.
When is the election night?
Yeah, well, on the night or whatever. Even if we have to record it, I want to get you while you're there.
Yeah, okay. So I'll be in New York from the 1st of November to the 6th of November, and election night is the 5th of November.
Okay,
gotcha. So, but I'm thinking usually. I've been in California for election nights in the USA before, and the results start coming about 7 p.m. But New York, and they're basically, you know, by 10 p.m. what the result is going to be. New York's on the other side of the country, and if they're waiting for some of those swing states like Philadelphia, then that might be after midnight, 1 a.m., 2 a.m. before those results start showing. But I think it's going to be close enough to be an exciting race. And I guess my only caution is that I think it will be safe enough to be in Times Square during that time. But I think that if anything goes wrong, it won't be to do with the actual election result. It will be to do with the perception that was this a fair and free election or not.
You can always wear a T-shirt. I'm a Kiwi.
Yeah. I'll probably wear an RCR hat, Paul. Maybe there'll be someone there that recognises that.
There might be some fans. You never know. Okay. Far and wide, you know.
There are Kiwis all over the world, and I know that.
Yeah, and we get people, other nationalities, listening to us through all the sharing in other countries aware of us as well. We're finding that now.
Yeah.
So there you go. All right, let's get on to some travel matters. Should we start with travel insurance? You've got a story here that throws up some interesting points. So this involves a crash in Indonesia.
Yeah, something I saw in the New Zealand Government Herald. A mess, no cover for crash victim. Scooter fine print catches out couple now facing huge hospital bill after Bali accident. The family of a New Zealand woman hospitalised in Bali with serious head and lung injuries says her insurance will not cover her treatment because she was hurt in a scooter crash. The Christchurch real estate agent had emergency surgery at Shalom Hospital in Lombok after the accident a week ago. She was on her way to get dinner when she was thrown from the hired scooter, suffering a broken rib, punctured lung, head injuries, lacerations on the right-hand side, and so on. Her sister from Christchurch said the hospital bill was more than $18,000 already. Whoa. And this was a week ago. I believe it's more than $25,000 now.
Gee, okay.
Her partner, Cameron, said he only realised after the crash that their New Zealand-purchased travel insurance policy only covered moped claims involving bikes with engines of 50cc or under. And they didn't realise that the mopeds they hired, I think they hired one each, were 125cc.
Oh, dear. Boy, that'd be bad news, wouldn't it, realising that?
It's not the first time this has happened, and this is why I thought it might be an interesting thing to be aware of. Rarotonga is another place where Kiwis go regularly, and hire scooters. And often you see the tourists riding around in the Cook Islands without helmets on and whatever. I often wonder, do they know whether they are covered or not? Because yeah. the crucial part of it is in this item here, it says Mitchell said they were unaware of the rule before they hired the bikes. I guess the main thing is if you have a motorcycle license, then you can hire a motorcycle. If you have a car license, then you can hire a car from Avis or Hertz or whatever. There seems to be something more attractive about hiring a scooter in Bali or Thailand or the Cook Islands, because the operator of the business will hire you a scooter and not check whether you've got a license or not. They just want your money. But ultimately, you're doing something that isn't legal. And that's the reason why these things aren't covered. And unfortunately, I can think of three or four examples over the last 4 or 5 years where this has really caught people out badly.
Yeah, and medical bills are usually huge, right? I mean, anything, even minor stuff, is going to cost you if your policy doesn't cover it.
Done in the US can easily end up costing $30,000 by the time you come home. You can't fly home in economy seat with a moon boot on or any sort of cast. So you'll end up having to come business class. Might be a bit of an endurance test for some people, but, you know, I guess we would think of that as a treat, but not when you're in pain. And, you know, so it doesn't have to be a life-threatening thing for those bills to mount up.
So check the policy. See what the fine print says.
Usually most of it is logical. And as I say, you know, it wouldn't be legal for them to hire a scooter in New Zealand without a license over 125cc. So it means it's not legal overseas either. One of the other things to bear in mind about travel insurance is when should you buy it? A lot of people leave their travel insurance purchase until a few days before they travel, although they might have bought their flight 6 months.
That's me.
So they might have bought their flight 6 months before and the flights could be non-refundable or whatever. If your travel insurance costs you $120 or so, then you might as well buy it at the same time as you purchase your flights, because that way, if anything happens to you before you go, the non-refundable tickets will be claimable. And so you've got that value, and it doesn't cost any more in dollar terms to buy your insurance policy 6 months before you travel. The price of the insurance is based on the destination you're going to, your age, and how long you're away for. But if you buy it 6 months in advance, do you see what I mean? You're basically getting 6 months of cover.
Yeah, I do.
For no charge. Yeah. And many people who book, say, cruise holidays a year in advance, we always recommend once you've paid a deposit for your cruise and that's at risk, take your insurance out now.
Yeah. No, good advice. Makes sense. Okay. And I think they have a Give a Little page going to help raise some money for that. It's about all you can do, I suppose, if you don't have the bucks, the ready.
Kiwis are good like that.
Good to go.
Very good like that. But honestly, who wants to be at the mercy of that, to be honest?
Yeah, what happens in the... I've never been in that situation. What happens in the hospital when... What do you tell them? Actually, I don't have the money for this right now. I guess they keep... Their oath and ethics says that they have to keep treating the person. They can't just, like, throw them out on the street. So
when you've got travel insurance, it's easy. You just flash your travel insurance card. They'll liaise with your insurance company and you don't have to worry about the bill. Anything over, in our experience, anything over $4,000 or $5,000, the hospital, if you've got travel insurance, the hospital doesn't expect you to pay that. They'll happily negotiate directly with your insurance company. When you don't have insurance, I think you are at the mercy of the hospital system there, where you'll be accumulating a bill, and whether you have trouble departing the country before it's paid, those sort of things are just worries I don't want to have.
No. Same. All right, so that's a bad example of not reading the fine print of your travel insurance policy. Refreshed Boeing 777, this is Emirates, and they're refreshing the cabin. And these aren't new aircraft, are they? They've been in the fleet for quite a while. So one of those cabin upgrades, I've seen a video of the work involved. Man, that must cost a lot to do.
I guess so. But it costs a lot to buy a plane, doesn't it? And Emirates have a huge fleet. I mean, to be honest, even the older 777s that are not refitted, they're still fairly luxurious in my view. One of the big differences with the ones they're refitting is that they're adding in premium economy. So there's at least a step now between economy and full-on business. In New Zealand, they no longer bring the 777s to New Zealand because our demand is now higher. But Kiwis quite often strike those 777s when they're flown from here to Dubai. And then they might be going Dubai to France, Paris, Nice, in Switzerland, Geneva, Zurich, those sort of places. Anywhere outside of London, you'll quite often strike the Emirates 777s. So it's good that they've actually rolling those out now, because premium economy is really popular out of New Zealand for those long flights.
Where does it sit on pricing, premium economy, in this case anyway, but generally, I guess, too?
Yeah, it's a good question, because many people don't actually understand this. If an economy fare is $2,000, roughly, then in broad terms, a premium economy will be that times two. So it'll be $2,000, $4,000 for premium economy, and it'll be about the premium economy fare times 2.5. So you'd be 2,000, 4,000, 10,000 economy, premium economy, and business.
And you get more leg room. I've walked past the premium economy cabins or sections in some aircraft, haven't actually sat in any.
Yeah.
But walked through them. It looks like more leg room. Seats are kind of wider. I guess there are more entertainment options or more service options from the cabin crew. Is that how it works?
Yeah, it's still got the word economy in the description of the product, and I think it's important to know that, because as opposed to business class, which is always lie flat, premium economy is still a chair, but it's wider. It does recline a lot further. You'll get double the baggage allowance that you would get in economy, and quite often that's important to people who are traveling long haul or, you know, away there. You'll always be able to check in at the premium counter, so it's quicker. And, you know, ultimately what people want is more room, more space around them, more comfort. And, you know, particularly those long haul flights where it's Auckland, Singapore, London, or Auckland, Dubai, London, you're going further than 12 hours in a stretch. I honestly find it pretty hard to sit in economy for that. It's an endurance test on the way to London, whereas I prefer to enjoy myself just a little bit.
Yeah, you can always get up and walk around and stretch your legs though, Tim. You can do that.
Yeah, and during those days when we were bringing Kiwis home during the bad times, the bad couple of years, we were quite often, the planes were flying into New Zealand so empty that you could get lie-flat economy.
Yeah,
And that's something that we all live in hope of even now. You know, after we've booked for some of our customers, we'll often, you know, recheck the seating just a couple of days before they go, and we'll change what we've booked for them before so there's no one sitting next to them, and we'll try and plan it so that at least they'll have a spare seat next to them if there's one on the plane. And there are tricks that you can do to make sure that happens or to give yourself a better chance.
And you put the armrests up and you've got a whole, lie flat situation.
That's
potentially.
Right. Lie flat economy.
Yeah, and four seatbelts to keep you locked in.
Well, it's important that you keep one of those seatbelts on, Paul. We've discussed this before, isn't it?
Absolutely, yeah. Otherwise, you might hit the roof.
Literally.
What about their economy class cabin? Is there any more comfort to be squeezed out of an economy seat, do you think?
I don't really think there is. And some people will say, I love Qantas or I love Air New Zealand, they're my favourite, or I like Singapore Airlines, they're a little bit better. And, you know, when the cold, hard light of day hits you after you've 10 hours into a 12-hour flight, they are all a similar endurance test, you know. There might be very small differences, but they're really not that much. Sometimes, for example, when I look at one seat pitch compared to another on different airlines, there might be 1 inch different between Qantas and Air New Zealand, say. Sometimes airlines have narrower seats. You can also purchase the exit row seats.
Oh, yeah, there's a bit more room there.
Yep,
yeah,
there's a bit more room there. I'm a really tall fella, and so quite often when I'm checking in, if I'm flying economy, the check-in person will offer me an exit row seat if they haven't been pre-purchased before. Sometimes I take them, sometimes I don't, because sometimes they're the worst seats on the plane.
Oh, how's that?
Well, they're inevitably located next to the galley or next to the bassinet seats, which are, for example, on an Air New Zealand flight, the exit row seats are three next to the window, but immediately adjacent to that. So you've got A, B, and C, they'll be your exit row seats. D, E, and F, they'll have a bulkhead up next to them, and that's where the bassinets are. So you'll get the crying baby all night.
Crying babies.
You'll get the toilet door opening and closing all the time. The galley will probably be there. And there's always a few people that come and want to do their Pilates or something right in front of you where you think you were going to stretch your feet out. You know, there'll be people standing around there and just milling around. So sometimes I just don't think it's worth it.
Good to know. Let's talk about river cruising. Is that something that's becoming, I mean, it's been around for a while, but is that growing in popularity now?
It's been hellishly popular for a long time, you know, at least the last decade or so. There's a lot of advantages to river cruising. I mean, 20 or 30 years ago, we didn't really consider it. And people that wanted to not drive themselves through Europe, they would be doing coach tours like Insight Tours, Trafalgar Tours, that type of thing. River cruising has really taken off in the last 10 years or so, largely due to things like you unpack once. You know, you put your wardrobe, you put your clothes and your wardrobe on the boat. It cruises, and it generally cruises at night. All day, you're actually in a destination where you can get off and have a look around. So there's a lot of advantages like that. I don't think you have to be particularly senior in age to enjoy a river cruise as well. Again, it's one of those things where if you buy the right one, if you buy the appropriate type of cruise, then you'll probably like it.
What are some of the popular destinations for that, or cruise routes? I don't know how you'd describe them. Obviously, they're on rivers.
I guess the most popular one that we know of is the Amsterdam to Budapest one. It goes both directions, and history's never looked quite the same from the river. You know, that's where a lot of the ancient buildings are. The really romantic times are often built around rivers, the scenic, you know. Yeah, Amsterdam to Budapest is probably my favourite, but there are some in the south of France as well. Vienna to Bucharest is another one. I haven't done Vienna to Bucharest, but that type of thing, it gets you off the beaten track without you having to think too much. And I guess when you've paid for your river cruise, you've paid for your transport, your accommodation, comes with all the meals and drinks if you want that. Pretty easy.
I guess with a river cruise compared to a sea cruise, obviously there's no ocean swell to deal with. You're not going to probably get, well, you might get a bit seasick depending on how sensitive you are, but you're not going to get that. And just what you were saying before about the view from the river, that's where all the trading has historically been done through history as well, right? So
exactly.
That would be an element of it as well.
Exactly. The Gothic architecture, the history, you know that you're treading streets that have been trod by millions of people before. It just feels like nothing like we have in New Zealand. We just don't have that age stuff.
Yeah. You go down the Whanganui River, but you won't see much except the bush, I suppose, yeah.
Well, that's right. I mean, honestly, every year we book a few people down the Murray River.
Okay.
In Australia.
Yeah. All right.
The same sort of people that would do the Ghan rail trip will do a Murray River cruise.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, I've heard of the Ghan. How much do those cruises cost compared to, say, an ocean cruise, Tim?
They're quite similar in actual fact. You can suit most age groups and most budgets. A 12-night cruise, a river cruise will range between something like $3,000 up to $23,000.
Right, yeah.
So you've got the whole range in there. And it also depends what you want to include as well. Some people will include a drinks package. Other people don't care about that.
That's not too bad. as a starting point for 12 days, seeing history floating by?
Technically, when you do that, you can do that journey, whether it's ocean cruise or river cruise, and technically you can take no spending money and you'll survive just fine.
Yeah. Okay, Tim, great to catch up again. Thank you for that. You've got me curious about river cruising right now, actually, because it's probably going to be a time for some sort of holiday soon. So
that's good, Paul.
You've got me thinking about it. I'll do some more research, as they say. Yeah.
Excellent.
Which will probably be involve sending you an email saying, recommend something. Tim, if people want to get in touch, what's the best way?
Best way is to Google my name, Tim Malone, travel agent, and lots of links will come up and you'll find how to contact me.
Okay, maybe we'll talk before you go to the States and what we talked about before, but if not, it'll be right there, right now, as it's happening, hopefully.
Yeah, thank you, Paul. Thank you very much.
The RCR shop has great gift ideas, from great-looking tees, hoodies, caps, tote bags, bumper stickers, and more. The RCR shop is now open at www.realitycheck.radio/shop.